All right, guys, welcome into the Gas House Gang. We got Matt Pauly. We got Bernie Miklas. You got a weird-ass-sounding Kevin Wheeler. the Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling and, of course, my friends at Game Day Men's Health. Morning, fellas. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. And you know, your endorsement of Game Day Men's Health, you're living up to it, man. You're in the lineup. It's Game Day. You're gone. You're gone. You're not – you got a little Houston, bit of a man. Thing – A little bit of your, I don't know what it is, congestion or something. You sound like a frog, but you're like, it's game day, man. Put me in a line. I love it.
Yeah, just I'll play hurt, man. Doesn't matter. When you're not very good, you have to play hurt, Bernie. When you're a superstar, you can take days off. You can be like, I'll play tomorrow. But when you're not very good, when you're a role player, you got to post when they need you to.
Shut up. You're a star.
Obviously, we have a lot to do. We'll make it through the hour. And of course we only have Matt for a few minutes, so let's maximize that because he's doing his work down in Jupiter. So just what's the theme today, Matt? What did Ollie talk about? What caught your attention?
Yeah. So a couple things. Nolan Gorman is in the lineup today. He is playing third base. First time we've seen him at third base. The indication has been that he'll play third base when Nolan Arenado does not. There's still a chance that Arenado gets traded at some point in time. There's still, you know, when you think about J.J. Weatherholt and where he plays out in this organization, you would think that Nolan Gorman, from a long-term standpoint, third base is still very much in his future. So he's at third today and a good chance to get him in there. And then the other thing that we learned today was that Sonny Gray, tomorrow, as opposed to making his first start on – there's Mike Claiborne for people who are –
What's up, Claibs?
What's up? So for Sonny Gray is going to make his first appearance against hitters on the backfields tomorrow. There had been some thought that maybe he would start in, you know, Grapefruit League game tomorrow, but that's not going to happen as they continue to ramp him up. And he seems to be a little bit behind some of the other folks. I think he's just trying to time it out so he's right where he wants to be for opening day. But tomorrow he is going to be working against hitters on the backfields as opposed to starting a Grapefruit League game. So that means Eric Fetty will start tomorrow instead.
So we're thinking this is just by design. This is Sonny taking it slow, saving bullets for the regular season, all of that, and nothing to be worried about.
Yeah, according to Oliver Marmol, this was always the plan, that they had scripted out everything into next Monday's off day. So coming into spring training, everything was scripted through then, and then at the Monday off day, they're going to reassess some things and see, because they're just rolling through with the starting pitcher, so who has already started, they're going to go with those guys again another time through, and then once they get to Monday, that's when things might start to be tweaked a little bit.
What do we anticipate? Anything else? I mean, other than Sonny? I mean, obviously, it's an interesting note that Gorman's getting some third base time, although it makes some sense, right? I mean, I don't know, Bernie, who else would go there if Arenado's not going to play at this point. I mean, a lot of guys that can, but it probably does make sense to get Gorman some reps there just in case. I know it's not probably going to happen. I think we can all agree there's a low chance of a trade happening, but I guess it still could, right?
Yeah.
Good way to put it. Go ahead. Good, Matt.
Yeah, just, I mean, Gorman is going to be the guy who plays third when Arenado's not in there, so you need him play, I think, more so than Brendan Donovan. Donovan's going to be in left field and at second base, and he can play other places as well. If Arenado gets a day, it's going to be Gorman over at third. So obviously he's got to play these games here in spring.
All right, anything else for today that's interesting to you? Anything in the lineup outside of what we've talked about? Anything that they mentioned today that didn't come up yet?
You know, Arenado is in the lineup today. He's the designated hitter, so he's playing back-to-back games. We talked about this yesterday, Kevin, about how he made that trip over because he wanted to make sure that he didn't get more than 2 days off in a row. And when he had that introductory press conference, he made the statement that his intention was to come to spring training and play a lot of games. Well, turns out that wasn't lip service. That is a true thing. So he is in the lineup today.
Yeah, I thought I'm sure we can talk about this right after we let you get back to your business there in Jupiter, Matt. But it's kind of funny that you know how the world is. As soon as that news came up, it's like, oh, he's showcasing himself for the Yankees because the Yankees don't know enough about Nolan Arenado without seeing him for half a spring training game. I thought, you know, that's just kind of the world we live in right now, as opposed to what you just said, Matt. He wants to play a lot. He's, you know, he doesn't want to be off 2 days in a row. And oh, by the way, a couple of his best friends play for the Yankees, right? Yeah. I mean, Goldie and DJ LeMahieu are his friends. So, I mean, there's a lot more to it than just, hey, Yankees, come trade for me.
Yeah, it was an opportunity for him to go to dinner with Paul Goldschmidt and DJ LeMahieu the night before.
Yeah.
And he said it better than anybody. he's not going to showcase himself to another team in the first week of spring training when he has absolutely no timing. Like, it's a ludicrous statement.
Right, right. And again, he's going to get one or two at bats, you know, whatever. I mean, like, it's silly.
You know, the real quick, and I know you got to go, Matt, and Kevin and I can continue this, but I actually thought one aspect of this is funny, and I am not claiming by any stretch of the imagination that Arenado is like aware of like everything he does is going to be just people freaking nuts. Right. I think at least part of him enjoyed trolling all of these idiot bloggers and people just going nuts. Like I think he actually gets a kick out of that. I mean, I don't know that, but my sense is he's got a sense of humor with that stuff.
Well, why would he have ever posted the stuff in the off season with like the, you know, the LA right. song and stuff like that? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
There's some troll in him. And I actually say that like as a compliment. And he was probably driving back after that last night, just probably laughing his tail off. Like, can you believe these people? They're all going crazy. You know, there's some, I told you the text message, there's some blogger, I won't mention his name or where he works, but he basically blamed John Mozeliak for this. And I was like, well, you got me. I'm clicking to read this incredibly intelligent theory. The theory was that Mo told Arenado to go to Tampa because being there and, you know, if he did something like hit a home run, the Yankees would go, oh, my goodness. Whoa, let's make this trade before he gets back in the car and goes home. Yeah, like John Mozeliak. This was Mo. Like, he ordered Arenado to go to Tampa Bay. I mean, people are out of their minds.
Yeah.
I mean, just this is the dumbest point in the history of America. I mean, it's just, and these idiots are ruining spring training. I mean, because everything becomes like this. Oh my God, you know, it's spring training.
Yeah.
Relax.
Anyway. Yeah. Speaking of that, Matt, go do some work down there. Have fun. Tell Claves. Actually, just give Claves a pat on the back for us, man.
Oh, he can.
Because I know we just said, hey. There you go, Claves. Good to see you, buddy.
What is Claves? Hold on, man. Can he hear me or no?
I can hear you.
No. Man. What are you going to make a guest appearance on the Gas House Gang?
I am always willing to serve and be a guest. You just bring right. in.
You better.
I mean, I've done text a lot incoming. Of great things in my career, but I think this would be right at the top.
So we'll be right just there a little bit above those halls of fame, right?
By that
much. Hey, Claves. No, yes. Since you're here, real quick. No, seriously. And this is cool of you to like just make a cameo, like a walk on, you know, somebody like Johnny Carson.
Like Johnny Carson,
walks on, like, yeah. Whoa, Bob you know, Carson's like,
Bob Hope.
Yeah, so, now, what, tell me one thing so far that stands out to you in terms of spring training.
It can't get over with soon enough. And the reason why is the first five innings are always entertaining. But then when you bring in guys who are part of the 2026 or 2017, they can kind of slow things down.
But you like anything? You like anything you see, though?
You know what? I like the spirit. I like what I'm seeing from a pitching standpoint, from guys who are going to factor into this season. And I use Quinn Matthews, McGreevy, people like that. But so far, so good. Everybody looks like they're ready to go. I think it's about pace. I think after Monday, we'll see a different look as far as lineup and approach. But so far, so good.
All right. Thanks, well, Claves, you and Matt Pauly, enjoy your time down there, buddy. We'll let you guys run.
I'm available anytime, man. Good
next week,
to you
we're
guys.
Calling you. Next
right,
week,
thank
we're
you,
calling
man.
You.
All right, guys.
See you, buddy. All right, that's Matt Pauly and Mike Claiborne signing off from Jupiter. And this is the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler with you here, brought to you by Game Day Men's Health and Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, before we advance, tell us about Saliga.
I'd be happy to do it, man. Saliga Heating and Cooling has been taking care of the Miklas family for 16 years. That's an extensive history we have. Do you think we'd still be with them for 16 years if we didn't like some of the stuff or what? No. In fact, every day when there's, you know, we hear really cold weather's coming or in the summer, it's going to be really, really hot. And the first thing you think of is like, gosh, I hope my air conditioning can handle this, can kind of fight this heat off. Never have to worry with that when you are a Saliga Heating and Cooling a client, pardon me. And I've told this story before. It's just because of the way our old house is. And I do my work here on the third floor of the house, and the sun beats on the roof all day long, the hot summer sun. And you can have all the best air conditioning in the world, but when it's at the St. Louis worst in terms of heat, your air conditioning in this particular spot is not going to be able to fight it off very well. So Liga said, hey, no problem. We're going to put in a thing called a mini split, and your concerns are over. This home office will be as cool as you want it to be. And they were absolutely right. And it didn't even cost that much. So that's the kind of thing they can do. So I wanted to give you some personal testimony. They also have that American Standard heating and air conditioning equipment. So, and they are a dealer, independent dealer. So I tell you what, go look at all their services and look at the Priority Club. It's a maintenance program. It's very, very valuable, and you'll like it. But just go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com to find out all about all their services and all the information. SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Thank you.
All right, Bern. So let's keep up on the baseball side. We're going to talk sure, a bit man. About your video. So by the way, like and subscribe us on YouTube here on the Gas House Gang. Do that please. For the Bernie Show as well on YouTube. And you had a great video about Eric Fetty and the trade possibilities and the conversation there. And we're going to get to that in a minute.
Sure.
But I want to continue with the offense since we started with Nolan Arenado and the lineup. Obviously, the offense has to be better, right? I mean, so do we expect that? And I guess maybe the easier question to go with, not easier, but the complimentary question is, who do we expect that improvement from? I think that's really fun.
Well, man. And I'm glad we're talking about this. And by the way, the more you talk, the better your voice sounds. So keep
that's
talking.
Good.
So
I'll
keep
try, talking. Yeah.
Listen, I got a couple things. I'll just go with one since you like talked about players. I in no way am I making any type of excuse whatsoever for Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker. Gorman's first his April and May and the first week of June were really, really good. And then he went off the cliff, right?
Right, right.
Walker, it was just a lost season. There's no other way to put it. So I'm not sitting here saying, well, you know, if those guys really weren't all that bad. No, it was awful, okay? But people forget about how young they are, and people forget that sometimes young hitters take a step back. And let me just throw this out there, and I'm not going to overwhelm people with stats. But in 2023, Jordan Walker was 21 years old. Gorman was 23 years old. And this is what they did combined in 2023, which, by the way, isn't like 8 years ago. Okay. It's two seasons ago. It's two springs
right.
ago.
Right.
This is what they did collectively. In other words, you put their stats together. All right. 929 plate appearances. They hit .257. That's above league average. They had a .332 on base percentage. That's good. They slugged .461. That's good. They had a .793 OPS. They combined for 43 homers. They hit a home run not every 19 at bats. They had collectively had a really good walk rate. Gorman's strikeout rate was too high, but together it was only about 23%. My point is, they did this stuff 2 years ago. Nothing has changed other than they took a step back. My point is, and I wanted to put numbers on it. My point is, it's not crazy to suggest they will have a bounce back season. I can't predict numbers.
No,
but you know, this thing out there where people want to write a guy, they want to write a 23, 22 year old guy off because he goes into reverse one season after their first year together was really outstanding. As if it's like, well, you know, you better trade him now and try to get something for him. I mean, come on.
Right.
Now, there is no way, Wheels, I will predict this. There's no way these guys as a tandem will be that bad in 2025. Sorry. I think they'll be pretty good. I'm going to be very moderate about it. I think their 2025 will look a heck of a lot closer to 2023 than 2024.
Yeah, totally makes sense, especially with the focus on the weaknesses that they've displayed. And I think that, and it's something we touched on a little bit yesterday, Bernie, these things tie together that, you know, a bunch of the Cardinals' young hitters and maybe hitters in general, but specifically the younger guys had the same problem last year, they were just swinging at pitches they can't do anything with.
Right.
Right. You're chasing outside the zone. You're swinging at velocity up that you can't handle. You're swinging at sliders down at your shins away. And that's Walker. That's Gorman. You know, there have been, you know, obviously examples that was Goldie for a bit, right? Goldie was taking good pitches and swinging at other ones. And Arenado is a wild swinger. Mason Wynn had a good year, right? I mean, but he was basically league average. It's not like his offense was astounding. And maybe some of that was just getting tired because he was better than that up until September.
Yes, sir.
But still, he's a high chase rate guy. He doesn't swing and miss like the other guys. But what he's doing is making soft contact, where if he were a little more selective, he could make harder contact. So I think that's, you know, maybe not uncommon for young guys because minor league pitchers make more mistakes. You know, they're going to throw a few more fat ones, where big leaguers, when they miss small, and they usually miss off the plate rather than in the middle of the plate. But to your point about Jordan Walker, look at his career numbers. He's had 584 at-bats in the big leagues, which is pretty damn close to one normal season of playing every day, right? I mean, that's pretty close to it. Might be a little bit high for a guy batting at the bottom of the order like he has been, but that's still roughly a full season. He's sitting there for his career with a 740 OPS, which is 1% above league average, 20 homers, 70 ribbies, 29 doubles. And that's with all of the struggles baked in. If that's if that's just one full season, there's nothing. That's okay.
Right.
That's there's nothing great, but for a 21, 22-year-old, it's not the end of the world, and it's easy to see where the improvement can come. With all these guys, it's not about talent. It's not about ability. It's about pitch selection, you know?
And let me, since you went into Walker, let me do something similar with Gorman.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this stuff cannot be understated. Now, listen, does he strike out too much? Well, heck yeah. And it got really bad last year after starting the second week of June. But I think anybody who understands the modern game is willing, and they should realize, and they should be willing to accept the fact that if you're going to hit for a lot of power, it's okay to strike out maybe more than we would like. I mean, that's a good trade-off. So let me find this, because I think it, I think it's really, really good as far as if I can find this again. Nolan Gorman, among left-handed hitters, and I can't find the specific numbers, and I apologize for that. He among left-handed hitters in the major leagues, since he broke into the major leagues, he's been one of the best power-hitting left-handed bats in the majors.
Right.
And I have those facts. I just don't have them on this file that I thought where they thought they were. You know, in other words, like, this dude over this time has like hit more home runs than, say, Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper. He's hit more home runs than a lot of people. I think that he's 11th in home runs. I did remember this one. He's like 11th in home runs by left-handed hitters. Definitely since the start of like from 22 and 23 until the end of last year too. So even with this big plummet he went on last season, his power numbers stand up. And if you especially frame it along the lines of left-handed hitters, and what you say, well, Bernie, are you doing that just to kind of doctor the stats to make them look better? No. You know why? Because 70 to 72% of the plate appearances major league teams take each season, 72% are against right-handed pitchers. It's really important to have left-handed hitters that can do a lot of damage against right-handed pitchers. And Gorman has shown time and time again he could do that. If you look at his career from the time he came up until about June the 4th of 2024, his power numbers were outstanding. And like I said, he went over the cliff. It was sad to watch, but this doesn't mean that that's who he is. See, I prefer to look at him like, well, what was he in his first 295 major league games instead of his last 50?
Right.
Well, what's more indicative? The 50 games or 295 games, right? Correct. See what I'm saying?
100%. And
anyway,
you know, in addition, like the other places we could easily see more offensive production, Bernie, would be obviously Nolan Arenado taking an off season and bringing it into the regular season. I mean, like, he needs to be better. And he agrees with that. That's not picking on him. He has to be better.
Sure.
Based on his own standards that he's set in a Cardinals uniform. Forget anything in Colorado. The standards he set playing at Busch Stadium in a Cardinals uniform is what we should be talking about. He can be better and needs to be. But then the other part's the harder part, which is keeping guys like Wilson Contreras and Lars Nootbaar in the lineup. And with Wilson, again, moving from catcher to first base, hopefully that will do that, right? You'll take away that broken arm because you're not going to get hit with a bat on a follow through. And with Noot, I don't know what you do with that. I mean, I'm sure the training teams and all that, I mean, like, the science of it can be studied. You can alter workout programs. You can add stretching. You can do all those things. But his are typically more of the nagging injuries, although last year one of them was from running into a wall. So can't really, maybe just don't do that anymore. But, you know, keeping guys on the field would make this lineup a lot better.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I also look at this, and, you know, I know my reaction to this when I've talked about it publicly, even on my own video at YouTube, is kind of like, you know, me looking to be Mr. Happy, Mr. Optimist. Yeah. I'm not. I'm actually, this is born out of my pragmatism. The Cardinals, last season, their performance with runners in scoring position, Bill DeWitt has owned the team, you know, for 29 season. It was the worst performance a Cardinals team had ever had with runners in scoring position. And actually, it goes back farther than that. I'll spare the further details. I was going back to, like, as far as I could go almost to see where that batting average ranked. And you got to go way, way back. This was a historically bad performance with runners in scoring position. And if I could be numbers nerd and throw one more out, I looked at the last 10 seasons of Major League Baseball, and I looked at where, so that's 300 individual team seasons, 10 years, 30 teams, 300. It's a list of 300 teams, right? The Cardinals, 229 batting average last year on that list of 300 teams over the last 10 years, ranked 283rd, and their slugging percentage was 296th out of 300. They also had bad batted ball luck with runners in scoring positions. My point is, one thing I've learned is the runners in scoring position stuff, there is some randomness in there. It fluctuates, okay? And when you're really, really good, there's a chance it's not going to last. The 2013 Cardinals were an example of that. They couldn't get it hit with runners in scoring position once they got to the World Series.
Right.
They were ridiculously good throughout the season, but it finally caught up to them. And there's just no way anyone can convince me that this team will be that bad again with runners in scoring position, because things tend to normalize over time. And if they even have moderately better batted ball luck, those numbers are going to go up. The only thing I would say that they'll have to prove is that they're going to have to hit for more power. They're going to have more slug.
Yeah,
with the runners in scoring position. See, I'm talking a lot, so you don't have to.
I appreciate it.
So, but you know what I mean? It's just sort of the thing where something is so at the extreme, one way or the other, there's going to be a leveling off. And if you're really, really bad, there's no way you're going to be that bad 2 years in a row. And I think that that's something that should be emphasized or at least talked about. Thank you, man.
It's a really good point. Really good point. All right. It's the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler. Obviously, I sound like crap. I apologize. Just getting through it today, and then we'll see where we go for the rest of the week. A couple things. So we're going to get to the Fetty thing in a minute, but let's finish up some offense. We had a couple of comments that we can toss in here. Plus, there's a secondary topic about improving offense and a different way to do that. But let's throw Tim's comment up there. And for those listening on the radio, Tim says Gorman should have to earn his spot on the team. He shouldn't be anointed the second or third baseman. Well, he's not going to be anointed the third baseman, number one. Number two, why wouldn't 3 years of producing power in the major leagues earn you a spot on a roster more than 20 games in spring training?
Yeah, like,
that doesn't make any sense. I mean, It makes more sense for somebody that doesn't have a track record. So if Nolan hadn't hit 27 home runs one calendar year ago, then maybe we would have a conversation. But, I mean, the guy has shown that he can be a good hitter. He had one bad month last year. It was like 5 weeks of sucking. And the rest of his time as a big leaguer, he's been productive. Not elite, not an all-star, but productive. I don't get why you want – who's going to take the job? Who's going to – and what could they show you in 20 spring training games that's better than what he's shown you at the major league level. This is that small sample size reaction you're talking about, Byrne. And I'm not trying to pick on you, Tim. I'm just saying that teams are not looking at things in those little windows like we do. And that ties into the Arenado stuff we were joking about at the beginning. You're not going to change the Yankees' mind by going and playing four innings in a spring training game. And all the dopes that were on Twitter suggesting that that might be a thing just don't understand how it works. All the time that they've spent scouting Nolan Arenado for a decade, they're going to change that because he has two good at bats in a spring training game, right? Oh my God, we have to have him. And we got to get to understanding how people in the sport think and stop listening to the noise on social media, because a lot of those people don't know how people in the game think. Does that make sense the way I'm saying it? I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just saying,
makes a lot of sense.
Nobody in the game is going to say, yeah, we've seen this guy for essentially 3 years, 2.5 years in the big leagues, but boy, these next 20 games against minor league pitchers are really going to change our minds.
It just defies common sense. I have the numbers. I'm not going to read them, but I did a study like I alluded to, and I tracked what Gorman did his first 295 games in the big leagues. And then his last 52 games of last season were bad. It's just, you put it all together. So why in the world, when someone who has shown at a very, very young age that he can hit for really mad power, and he's also one of the best left-handed hitters in baseball doing that over that time, there's no excuse for how bad he was towards the end of last season. But to my friend Kevin Wheeler said, so if he, by the way, he's working with a new batting coach, and not every lesson's going to pay off immediately, but I think it's been a good relationship with him and Brant Brown. But if this guy doesn't have a good spring, what, goes to the minors? I mean, can we be grown-ups here, right? And just quit making these extreme declarations about stuff, you know. Nolan Gorman, when he's right, and he's right a lot of times, he'll always strike out, maybe more than we like, but it's worth it because you get a lot of slug, and he's really good against right-handed pitchers. So you're going to give up on that because half of June and July were really bad, and then in August he was still bad, and then they sent him down.
Right.
So you're going to use that to define him rather than the overall career that he's had so far at a very young age. I don't understand the logic. And as I always like to say, I don't mind people being critical, because I'm critical myself, but I try to do it. I try really hard to do it when it's warranted. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to criticize. But don't go looking for silly things and making these declarations like, you know, what's the baseline for someone like our viewer? What, he's got to hit 290. He's got to have 8 home runs. He's got to slug 490.
Yeah, you can stop at 290 for some people, Bernie. All they care about is batting average.
Well, I know. So if he comes in under that, what, he's banished?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's grow up. Okay. Let's try to be smarter about stuff.
All right. Real quick. Three run homer, or sorry, at least a three run shot for Nolan. So if he had done that yesterday, he'd be a Yankee.
He'd do great.
Sorry. Last thing on this, Bernie, this is a quick thought. And then we'll get to the Fetty thing in our final segment. But I also think that part of improving the offense is using your bench better. Essentially, like, not doing what you did last year and having two dead bench spots that you don't use,
right,
with older players who are there for quote unquote leadership. You need useful pieces on the bench. And, you know, a lot of times teams like to use defensive substitutions on the bench. I would like to rethink that, because I think the best teams use their bench as an extension of their starting lineup. You know, the Dodgers lineup is probably the same every day, 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5. After that, it changes based on matchups, and that's the best team in baseball. That's the biggest payroll in baseball. I think it would be wise to be a little more flexible with how you're going to build a bench to get more offense out of it based on matchups, and not just, well, we might need a defensive replacement if we're ahead. I'm not saying that's unimportant. I'm just saying that you kind of have to rethink, you know, and I think fans need to, too, that a lineup isn't just nine guys. Most teams that are really good are using 10, 11, 12 guys, and they're playing matchups at least in the bottom third of their lineup, but usually not the top. The top is going to be your best guys. And, you know, maybe that's kind of the way we think of it is, you know, your quote, everyday players are five or six guys. And then everything else is, all right, who are we facing? What does that pitcher do well? What do our guys handle well? Lefty, righty, who hits fastballs? We got a fastball pitcher. Who hits breaking balls? We got a breaking ball pitcher. And I don't know if we're going to evolve all of that this year, but that's another way to score more runs.
Well, can I use an example of what you're talking about, mm-hmm. and to extend your point, which is a really good one? It's up to the manager, and I don't care who the manager is. This applies to every manager, every team. You also have to be really sharp about how to use your personnel.
Right.
Can I give you one little example? And it's literally a little example because it's a small sample, but it's still an example. Last season, first of all, the Cardinals made a huge mistake because they had a team with no offense and they didn't call. Lukin Baker was having an unbelievable season at Memphis, right? They didn't bring him up until August the 21st. And at that point, you look back on that now and you're like, plus the Cardinals did not hit left-handed pitching very well last year. So you're, wait a minute, you know, no one's saying Lukin Baker is, you know, going to be the right-handed salt in the SWAT. Okay, I've got reasonable expectations for him, but the one thing he can do is he can crush left-handed pitching, and he's been doing that a long time. So last year when they finally brought him up, okay, there was a stretch where they had six games against left-handed starting pitchers. And he only started half the games.
Right.
The other thing, and let me get to the money point here. And again, very small sample. Last season, Baker didn't hit right-handed pitching well at all. It was really bad. He destroyed left-handed pitching in the major leagues. The brief time he was a Cardinal. Despite all that, and despite we hear this stuff all the time about, well, you know, boy, having Lukin Baker's bench, the right-handed bat on the bench, you know, that's a weapon. We got to keep that in mind. Last season, when they finally brought the big brute up to the major leagues after he's destroying left-handed pitching, right? He had more plate appearances, 27 against righties, than 22 against lefties. Now, how in the world does that make sense? Seriously. Mm-hmm. And why is he sitting? If you want to take a look at him and you're serious about it, you got to find a way to start him most of the time against left-handed starting pitchers. Right. If you're serious about taking him seriously.
Right.
Otherwise, spare us the stuff where you're telling the fans and media what they want to hear. I prefer to look at what you actually do as a manager when you make personnel decisions.
It's the Gas House Gang on all of the KMOX social media channels. He's Bernie Miklas, which you can tell. I'm Kevin Wheeler, but I sound like crap today.
Let me try to talk like you. I don't know if I can do it.
Anyway, I feel like Pharrell on the bench. How can I be the man if you're the man? That's what I feel like. If you guys listened to Pharrell back in the day, he's still on, by the way. He's doing gambling stuff. But if you've listened back in the day, you know what I'm talking about. Let's do one more quick hitter on Saliga and then talk Eric Fetty.
You got it, buddy. Saliga Heating and Cooling's been taking care of us, as I've mentioned, for 16 years. They've been taking care of St. Louis since 1927. Four generations of Saligas have doing this. Dan Saliga's in charge now. Never been better. The business has never been better. And I want to talk to you. Of course, they're an independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer, so always remember that, too. That's the best equipment there is. But they work on all makes and models. It depends on what you have. But I've told you about their service, how great it is, professionalism. You know, we're talking about their trustworthiness, honesty, their promptness. When they come in your home, they're really classy. But I want to tell you, really look into this Priority Club, because when you become a member of the Priority Club, it's a maintenance plan. You're going to have the peace of mind. They'll come out a couple times a year and check your stuff, basically. You can peace of mind and knowing it's safe. It's working great. There's nothing to worry about. And you can get on with your life with a peace of mind, right? And the other thing is, when they come out and do the maintenance checks, if they find a little problem, they can take care of it. And it's a little problem, which means it's an inexpensive thing. But if you let some things go too long, they turn into a big problem at greater expense. So you can save money because they'll extend the life expectancy of your equipment. Find out more about the Priority Club. Go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Thank you.
All right, we got about 4 or 5 minutes to close things out, Bernie. And for anybody that wants a little more extended look at this, they can hit the Bernie Show on YouTube and see the episode about Eric Fetty and the possibility of trading him. And there have been reports. Our friend Derek Gould has mentioned that other teams seem to think that he could still be available. But obviously, the Cardinals are going to want a high price. They're going to want a high price to move innings right before the season. They're going to want a high price because of his just general value, because he doesn't make a lot of money. I find this to be fascinating, and I think there is an argument to say maybe this is a guy, unlike Helsley, that you would be more likely to move early because you do have bodies, you have starting pitchers to put in there. But also, I think the risk is higher that he isn't what he was last year. I think he probably will be, because his under the hood numbers are really good. You know, he's got really effective pitches. He throws strikes, all of that. But, you know, he's only done it one time, where Helsley, we know, Ryan, if Ryan Helsley's not hurt, he's going to be blowing people away.
Right. And some of the comments under the video, and I respect these comments. And if I had to do the video again, I would have pointed out what you just pointed out. He's only done it one year.
Right.
He had a sketchy career with Washington in terms of, Tommy John surgery. And then he had a couple average years, couple bad years. But like we've seen, you know, he went to Korea, and he also worked with some pitching analysts, He reshaped a lot of his pitches, and his cutter, his sweeper, and his sinker were three of the best pitches in baseball last year in those pitch categories.
Yeah.
The other thing about him, he's equally effective against left-handed bats and right-handed bats. Even though he's a right-handed pitcher, he gets a lot of soft contact. You can't square him up. So people will say to me, well, listen, there's not going to be that much of a demand on him. He's not a big strikeout guy. You know, there's still an art to pitching. You can't have like a whole staff of guys that throw 98 and have big strikeout totals. Okay.
Right.
If you can get a lot of soft contact, right? If you have so much movement on your pitches, which he does, and if you can get a lot of soft contact, you're going to be in good shape. And he had a really outstanding year last year. And you're right, there may be some teams holding back because, like, well, wait a minute. Yeah, that was really impressive. And, oh, by the way, he's not making much money. But can he do it again? Can he do it again? And I understand that, if we're trying to decide whether teams will come for him earlier than later, well, they would come for him earlier if there's some really serious pitching issues. Now, the Mets have them. But they want to be patient for now. I get that. But the thing of it is, if Fetty, the gamble for the Cardinals is him staying healthy, which I think he will. But can he maintain his performance we saw last year?
Yeah.
If he goes through 2-3 months of doing that, and then teams are looking at their own staff and they're looking at where they are in the playoff hunt, all of a sudden he becomes a very valuable piece. So I think there's something to the idea that maybe his value would be greater towards the trade deadline, but it is a risk, as you said.
It just depends, right? I mean, like if somebody loses, if a contender, not the Dodgers because they have 18 pitchers, but you know, if a contender loses someone for 4 months, they might offer you what you want. And it kind of goes back to what we discussed in the offseason. When you get the deal that you think is the deal, then you pull the trigger, whether it's now or in July. But you're right about his performance, Byrne. I mean, like I agree that, you know, there's some risk in that he hasn't done it before, but he has the things that a lot of teams really like. You mentioned the pitches that he has that he relies on the most weren't even in his repertoire when he was in Washington.
Right.
The cutter and the sweeper are his two best pitches. He didn't even throw them when he was in Washington. He was throwing a really sloppy, ineffective curveball. Actually threw the cutter and it was good back then, but he didn't have the little bit of extra velo. And, you know, he has another thing that is under the hood, but teams love it. He's got great extension, which means he releases the ball closer to home plate, which is the ideal. Because obviously the ball is at its max velocity when it leaves your hand, right? It's never moving faster. The minute it leaves your hand, it's decelerating. Well, the further you extend toward home plate, the faster that ball gets on hitters. So 93 from him might look like 95 from somebody
who's
releasing the ball further back because they don't get as much extension. So this is just, again, This is how some teams work. A lot of teams, Cleveland loves extension in their pitchers and they seek it out. So just, to, you know, there are a lot of things that make him really valuable, both to the Cardinals and potentially to other teams. But it seems, Bernie, would you agree? And we'll close on this.
Sure. That
if you're going to move him in spring, it's almost like it's a godfather offer from somebody that loses a pitcher and they're going to give you some really good players for him.
Yeah. And I'm going to repeat what you said, because I said it in the video. I don't care if an offer comes in that you're really happy with, take it. Don't try to game it like it's like, well, if we wait a little bit longer. No. If Chaim Bloom and Rob Serfolio are looking at the prospects because they know them better than anyone the Cardinals have had working for them, and they say, well, I don't think we're going to do better than this. This is really good. You take it. Do not hesitate, no matter what the timing is, right?
Yep. Totally with you. Perfect timing, too, because we're going to wrap things up. I made it. It didn't sound great, but I made it through. Bernie, it's always good. We may be chatting again tomorrow because I'm not sure if Matt, I don't think Matt's available, and I don't think Tom is. So hopefully this little sucker starts working a little better and we can do this again tomorrow. But either way, have a good one, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, man, and I hope you feel better. Thank you.
Working at it. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Kevin Wheeler. This has been the Gashouse Gang.